welcome to your Friday postgame. I am your host, Malcolm Fletcher, and I got all your emails, I got all your letters. I've gotten rid of the dead weight. Steve and Dave are, we're done with them. With me today, Matt Atchity and Grace Baldridge, the new three amigos, because I don't even remember those other guys' names.
Were there actually complaints, or are you just like fucking with us?
Well,
there can have been, right?
Most people love Dave, but some have a love, not so love, hate, well, I didn't say hate, but love, not so love relationship with him. Steve, he gets mostly just love.
Okay.
But Dave, most people don't know. Steve, at least people know from Aggressive Progressives, which he is a regular host of every 6 weeks or so, when he has time to appear. But I'm glad that Matt and Grace were able to do it. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Grace has been here before. Matt's first time. Matt has been on the postgame before, and if you did not see his postgame, he gives this whole story about how he grew up in Missouri, of all places. Can you believe it?
Right. So if you're having trouble staying awake or staying asleep, right?
No, it was
trouble
fun.
Going to sleep. Watch that piece.
That was good. I like that that postgame. So, but you might be wondering, what is this image behind me? It is the Great Alaska, or the Alaskan Highway.
Are you going to ask me about that?
I'm not, but if you would like to talk about it, you
can. I drove from LA to Alaska.
So today, well, Saturday, will be the 75th anniversary of the dedication of the Alaskan Highway. So we're celebrating that to an extent.
I drove from LA to Alaska in September. I was gone for the whole month. I know you both missed me dearly and noticed, but I was gone driving the Alaskan Highway. And I actually just, my pajamas that I wore this morning and last night it's this t-shirt that I got that says I drove the Alaskan Highway and survived. And they're all selling the t-shirts because of the anniversary dedication.
Did you get a t-shirt that said I surfed the Alaska pipeline?
No, I didn't.
I find it interesting that you clarify that the pajamas you were wearing this morning and last night. So
yes,
you didn't.
I just want people to know that I sleep fully clothed at all times, because the contrary to that would be too alarming and scary for your viewers. So
I just
know that I am always covered from neck to ankle.
No, the alternative would be like at some point in time.
I'm a never nude.
Some point in time during the night, you got up, changed pajamas, because I wear one pair of pajamas to bed, and then in the morning, they're all rumpled, and I want to look good for everybody. So
I want to look good in my morning coffee. Yeah.
So let's see. The highway wasn't open until the public until 1948. So it was completed in 42, but not open to the public until 48. I'm not sure exactly why, but it is now. It was legendary for being a rough, challenging drive, but it is paved the whole way now.
It is mostly paved. And most of the time, because we heard when we were announcing that we were doing it, there were some people that reached out and said, I hope you are either taking a rental car or, just really be mindful of and soup up your car ahead of time, because it's going to be a very rough road. Now, this is before any snowfall in Alaska, so we were really fortunate. Of course, it does get pretty chilly. But while most of the road is paved and good, and some stretches would actually be really quite smooth, there were some stretches where you would have to wait for a pilot car to come fetch you, and then they would sort of take you around like just really crazy potholes. And you're fortunate that you have a pilot car that would help you do that. And it pretty much was just myself, my girlfriend and our dog, and our little Subaru. It can't be gayer, I know. And trucks, and just like big truckers with many wheels. And we just have our four. And so it was sometimes intimidating, and it is mostly paved now, but there are still ways to go. That said, I highly recommend the journey for anyone that wants to do some soul searching.
Now, I have a question, because I have a friend who spent some time in Alaska, and he talked about if you go into Alaska and you have the slightest problem with the logging industry and just logging as an issue, then the constant stream of logs being driven southward will inflame that feeling. Did that happen to you? Is that
lots of logging?
Lots of logging and lots of like just an endless stream of trucks coming the other way, taking trees away.
Yeah, I wouldn't say endless stream, because there would be probably 3 hours sometimes in between seeing another car. But the likelihood that that would be either an RV of people in their 60s just living their best life, or a logging truck, or hunters, or there were a couple people that just came out of the woods with guns that I'm pretty sure were hunting illegally, or serial killers, we don't know. But in any case, there was a lot of loggers going the opposite way.
And so you would go. So you would go for at least saying hours without encountering anybody else. And were you thinking, geez, if we break down, Yeah, we better hope a serial killer comes by to save us.
Yeah, we had a tire pressure light come on at one point in time, and both of us, and we had again probably about 3-4 hours until we got to, I think this was it wasn't Dawson Creek, it was
Saddle Creek.
No. Because there is actually a place called Dawson Creek.
Delta Junction?
No, it wasn't Delta Junction. It was Fort Nelson. I think it was Fort Nelson because that's where the signpost for us.
There is a Dawson Creek in British Columbia,
yeah.
So you're not making that
I'm
up.
I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to wait for you guys to understand that my life will not be over if you don't understand that there's a place called Dawson Creek on the way to the Alaskan Highway. Anyway, we had a tire pressure light came on. We had about 4 hours left. Both of us were like, How are you feeling? We're like, well, it's fine. It's probably nothing. We finally got our car fixed up by this really nice guy at an automatic mechanic shop. When we got to Fort Nelson, it was very nice of him. And then we were fine. But then afterwards, we admitted to each other that we were terrified, even though we'd pretended like we were cool. And I don't think it was Fort Nelson. I think Fort Nelson was where we stayed at a sketchy motel. But I think there was the city in between Fort Nelson where the signpost forest is. And maybe you guys can remember.
You can look up.
No.
I know, and we're going to talk about this. I don't know how fearsome Willie is.
Oh, wait a minute. Willie might have already dropped in the competition of greatest dog at the OIT.
Well,
but we'll get to that
fearsome,
later.
We'll
get to that later. So I want to start with Weekly World News, which you all know and love. It's basically what I do is I cull the globe, news stories from around the world. And then originally it started that I wanted to talk about international stories with Steve and Dave in the post game. So I would send them various stories that I like to talk about this and this and this, and they would never read them or click on the link or anything.
That sounds about right.
So instead, I decided to take Lemons Make Lemonade and turned it into a quiz to punish them for not studying, not doing any research ahead of time. So that's what we're going to do. And I believe we have an opening graphic that goes with this, don't we?
Weekly World News.
There it is. Now, that's what you have these in front of you for.
Okay.
Grace, you've seen it before.
It's still funny.
It's still terrific. All right, so the first question comes to us from, I believe, somewhere in Africa. It's Kenya, is it? That's correct. Yes, that's where Kenya is, as we all know, on the in East Africa there. And the question is as follows. The controversial rerunning of the Kenyan presidential election proceeded on Thursday, despite what happening the day before. Was it A, the opposition vice presidential candidate was shot and killed during a campaign rally? B, judges responsible for deciding whether the election would take place failed to show up at court? C, citing threats of violence, the UN pulled election monitors from 7 voting districts? Or D, discovery that the thousands of voting machines ordered for the election were actually just used Betamax VCRs? And then you get to choose among A, B, C, and D. And I'll keep score. There's no, you don't get anything for winning, but you do get the sense of defeat that comes with losing.
All right.
Do we have our answers?
Sure.
Okay, we have answers. We have A from Grace and B from Matt. What is the correct answer, Irma? Correct answer is B. Ooh, judges responsible for deciding whether the election would take place failed to show up to court. All right, so now we talk about the story. What were they doing?
The judges.
Well, they had various excuses, okay. But this election, so they voted already once in August. The judges nullified it because of too many irregularities, and now they were going to rerun it. And there was a petition saying, no, we think the irregularities are still happening. We shouldn't be. But there's a lot of threats of violence, and that's why we suspect only 2 of the 7 judges showed up.
I'm unreasonably proud of myself for why I picked B. And I can tell you why. Well, so D is obviously fake, right?
Right.
That's obviously
mm-hmm.
fake. C, I figure, is wrong because the UN would not have stopped under threats of violence. They just would continue to send people who are unarmed and get them beat up or killed. And A, that I didn't know anything about this story, not that I'm knowing everything, but there would have been enough news that I would have thought we would have heard about the assassination or killing of a vice presidential candidate. So the only one that would be under the radar would be B. So that's why.
How about Matt Atchey turning the Friday Post game into an episode of Card Sharks?
Thank you.
Where you have to explain your answer.
Yes.
But you don't have to. But I appreciate you doing so. Steve is notoriously bad at this game. But I should say, do not guess based on it was already B once because I randomize it, and it could be all B. It could be no more. Steve used to do that, so I had to I had to change my system. But anyway, so what's the story? So Kenyans voted today. As I mentioned, the August vote was nullified. There were reports of minor scuffling, but nothing in the regions where President Uhuru Kenyatta has support. There was no violence, but his opponent in this election, whose name escapes me right now, Odinga. It's Raila Odinga, I think. Raila Odinga. That's it. He's pulled out of the race. He said there are too many irregularities. There's Raila Odinga, and then we also have Kenyatta. We have an image of him as well. So the opposition, he said he was going to pull out, but he left his name on the ballot, so you could still vote for him. But there was a petition, as I mentioned. I'll just say that there was tear gas, there was violence, and one protester allegedly died of gunshot wounds. Two more deaths were later reported by the AP and other areas. But we have here's some people, and these are the protesters who do not feel it's fair, and these are the judges. So let's go to the first.
But they didn't show.
These are judges who didn't. Not all of them showed. So here's the first text.
If they didn't show up, how'd you get that picture?
They were there before. I was there to snap it earlier. I knew I was going to cover this story. So the political crisis deepened on Wednesday when the country's Supreme Court did not hear a case that could have delayed the presidential election. Not enough judges were in attendance, Chief Justice David Maraga said. The court's inability to rule meant that the vote was allowed to proceed as planned. Mr. Kenyatta is almost certain to win. He has been accused of fraud by his longtime rival Raila Odinga, who dropped out of the race, saying it would not be fair. So it was only two of the seven judges who had to show up, whereas five are needed for a quorum. There were various excuses given, but we can presume that they feared for their lives. My guess. Now, Mr. Odinga and Mr. Kenyatta long entrenched political families in Kenya, and they've been at it for years. They went head to head in 2007, and then again in 2013, where Mr. Odinga lost both times. And we have the next text graphic. Mr. Odinga challenged the 2013 election results, but they were upheld by the Supreme Court. In August, Mr. Kenyatta won re-election with 54% of the vote in another contest against Mr. Odinga, who again challenged the results. Mr. Odinga said the vote had been marred by procedural irregularities and widespread vote rigging. This time, the Supreme Court nullified the results, citing irregularities in the vote, and called for new presidential elections to be held at the end of October, a historic rebuke of a sitting head of state. But as we know, the election went forward anyway. And apparently during the intervening month and a half or 2 months since the earlier election, 70 people have been killed across the country, and protesters began gathering in areas of support for Mr. Odinga leading up to the election, and then we've seen more violence since. And I think we have, we have one more text graphic for you. Last week, a senior official, Rosalind Akombe, resigned from Kenya's election commission and fled the country. In a statement issued from New York, she said the election staff members feared for their safety, and she warned that the poll results would not be credible. Hours later, Kenya's top election official, Wafula Chebukati, seemed to agree. He warned that he could not truly be confident of the possibility of having a credible presidential election unless the political parties agreed to dialogue. So the overall takeaway from this is that while the 2007 election in Kenya was supposed to be a hopeful harbinger because it was a peaceful transition of power, that is not maintained in Kenya. Now we have this violence, and this election is very dubious. Although I will note that last time we did Weekly World News, there was a story about UN observers being pulled out of Malawi because there were Malawians in rural areas who were killing people they suspected of being vampires. So
my argument holds no water.
I'm just saying there's a counter argument. Okay. There is a counter argument. So that's what's going on in Kenya.
That was Malawi. That was Kenya.
While we joke a little bit about it, this is a serious story. This election in Kenya is a huge deal. And because Kenya is, especially for East Africa, is sort of it's a leader in independence and in the example of democracy occurring in Africa. And if it's backsliding and it's not, it doesn't bode well for the future.
So I have a question about this story. Do you think it says anything about us as a country that Kenya has this series of contested elections and the Kenyans are rightly up in arms about it, right? They're taking this very seriously to the point of violence. Mm-hmm. And because obviously the right to vote and the right to kind of determine their own destiny is very important. And yet we've had more than a few elections here in the States in the last couple of decades that there's been questions about the accuracy. And it's hard to say that we do all that much more than just kind of go,
Yeah. That's true. I mean, you're right. There's two things. One is that this is going on and we don't hear anything about it for the most part here in the United States. So this is an international story. That's why I like to do the Weekly World News, is to, you know, maybe make some jokes about it, but we bring these news stories to our audience. But you're right that Americans tend to be complacent, and the question is whether it's because we have faith in our institutions that we don't really believe they're that bad, or is it maybe that things just aren't bad enough?
Well, and also the history to our institutions, where I think a lot of people are inclined to say, I don't like this outcome, this doesn't feel right, but it's the way it's always been. So there isn't really that inclination to shake things up and change things, as I think we see in countries who are coming to democracy a little bit newer. There is less of a like historical precedent there of like the two political parties, like Democrat and Republican, and that's the end.
Right.
Sometimes like, Green Party if we're feeling cute, but that's it.
That's true. I mean, in 2000, when there was so much uproar about the Supreme Court decision that basically gave the presidency to George Bush, and there was a lot of talk about if this were a third world country, people would be in the streets. Right. But that we honor our democratic institutions and we follow the Supreme Court, and people, you know, the peaceful transition of power is something that we, you know, that other countries could look to us as an example for that. But what you're saying is maybe we should look to other countries as an example to say we shouldn't just assume that everything is going to work out and it's for the best.
And to Grace's point, in our history, right, when the US first started, we were in the streets fighting for the right to vote and you know, getting the Brits out, right, getting our own independence, and then cut to, you know, what, 150 years later, as black people are getting disenfranchised and there's violence about them being, you know, having to get past poll taxes and
you're also skipping the Civil War.
Well, right, but the Civil War too.
But the Civil War is an example of, you know, when Abraham Lincoln won the presidency, he didn't get a single vote in the Deep South. Right. And so that was the South saying, we are not being represented by this government. Admittedly, you could only vote if you were a property owner, so it wasn't. But they were saying, look, this is not a representative government. The South harkened back and used in their rhetoric to the Revolutionary War, saying we're, you know, seeking independence from this tyrannical government. And so we do have examples of people being in the streets
in our past.
In the past. So, you know, there's a. I think it's an open question whether what's our real history that we're, or are we just lazy? Is it just that we're lazy? I think there's an element of that. We just want to watch TV and don't want to be bothered.
I think there's something to the peaceful transition of power that you were talking about. Like, you know, the rival in Kenya was basically saying, this isn't fair. I'm calling out my opponent. It's rigged. I disagree with that. Now, if an American politician were to do the same, people would say, it's petty. Get over it. This is bad for the country. And so now you have
sour grapes,
right. And so now it sort of brings to light the question, is it sour grapes or is it, you know, or should we have more sort of dissonance when it comes to the political sphere? And I don't know, because it doesn't really seem like they're happy in Kenya, and I wouldn't necessarily argue that we're happier here in the United States with the way that our political system has been run. So it's you just see how other countries do it, and I think it serves to educate, but I'm not really sure where we go from here.
There's also a general complacency. We have less than 50% of the people vote in off-year elections, and even in presidential elections. Admittedly, they're on Tuesdays, and a lot of people can't vote, and they disenfranchise a lot of people. So I'm not just blaming voters, but I think there is a general sense among a significant portion of the population, which is that, you know, if voting changed anything, they wouldn't let you do it. And so I'm not going to bother, because it's just 6-1, half nothing. You're going to get screwed by these people or by those people, and then, you know, when you get someone like Bernie or Donald Trump saying, you know, echoing that message, you get people out voting or interested in the political process who previously were not as interested. But I feel like I see things in the newspaper, read news every day that we should be out in the streets over as well. So
I got shit to do.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a new Netflix documentary I really want to see, and I'm like, so I got 2 hours of TYT to watch every day. All right, let's go.
Stranger Things 2 is out this weekend.
There's lots. Anything. Yeah, you're right. Oh my gosh, I forgot all about that. Okay, so let's go to where are we going next? Qatar, if that's how it's pronounced. That's where it is. I didn't even know that. I would have had no idea where this country was before I looked and found a map of it. So that's where it is. And the question coming to us from Qatar is as follows. Qatar's government recently agreed to halt what controversial practice? Was it A, confiscation of property from anyone convicted of engaging in homosexual acts?
Oh.
B, the use of migrant laborers as virtual slaves? C, criminalizing of social media postings critical of government ministers, or D, spelling the country's name with a Q not followed by the customary U? I try to make them tough. You saw through the last one, but will you see through this one? All right, do we have our answers?
Yes.
We have answers. We have a question, now do we have answers? Go ahead, we have an answer of C and an answer of A.
I'm a sucker for gay shit, mm-hmm. So whenever there's injustice and then they're like, and homosexual, I'm like, the gays! I have to fight.
I'm with you, I'm a sucker for gay shit too, until my wife looked through my search history.
I'm not confident in mine, but I don't have that much faith in Qatar.
Yeah, I don't think this is necessarily right, but standing up for the gays if they have been wrong.
So we have a C and an A. The correct answer, Irma, is B, the use of migrant laborers as virtual slaves.
You know, this is where my brain is, and it's because I watch a lot of Black Mirror, I think. I know that you didn't mean virtual slaves as like virtual reality slaves. Mm-hmm. I know that, but I did think it. I was like, well,
virtual
what if
has
they
multiple
are?
Meanings in our society.
Don't laugh at me. Skip off camera.
I thought about that when I was writing, and I was like, I gotta get this done. So
here's a question though: mm-hmm. Siri, Cortana, virtual slaves?
Virtual slaves.
Virtual slaves.
Alexa, virtual slave.
Yeah.
Is someone Echo, a slave if she's slave. Just doing, you know, monitoring you for the government's purposes? I mean, that's, you know.
Well, do they have a choice to whether or not they can monitor?
Exactly.
Us?
Has anyone ever asked Alexa?
Listen, if Alexa were a slave, she wouldn't constantly be interrupting me and saying, what was that you asked me? Because she doesn't, you know, just randomly not talking to her and she'll chime in. I'd be like, I wasn't talking to you. Shut up. So I treat her like a slave, you're right. All right, so what's going on in Qatar? So the International Trade Union Confederation, they claim to have secured the agreement of the government in Qatar to significantly improve the physical and employment situation of 2 million migrant workers, including ending the kafala system, which the ITUC has described as modern slavery. So there's some migrant workers, and a lot of this is coming to a head because in 2022, Qatar is going to host the World Cup, and there's been a tremendous amount of construction around that. And so they won that bid, but that's also brought a lot of attention on them and their labor practices, which are abhorrent. So the first graphic we have, that's a World Cup stadium being built by these 2 million migrant laborers. Bring up the first text graphic, Irma, please. If we have one, yes. Human rights abuses such as kafala, by which workers are tied to a single employer, low pay, poor accommodation, laboring in dangerous heat, and hundreds of unexplained deaths, have been subjected to intense global scrutiny and criticism since 2010, when FIFA voted for Qatar to host the 2022 World Cup. So the government has made concessions in negotiating with this international labor organization so they just announced it, and so the ITUC has announced that they are going to rescind their formal complaint. They're not going to go forward with it. We have another text graphic. Nicholas McGeehan, an expert on migrant workers' issues in the Gulf, sounded a note of caution, however. All we have today are promises, and promises have been broken before, he said. I feel we need to put expressions of optimism on hold until we see full details. Changes in the law were necessary and a time frame for promised reforms to be implemented. And so employers will no longer have the right to refuse visas for workers who want to leave the country, but at the same time, it doesn't address another element of kafala, which prevents workers from moving from one job to the next. But the negotiations are ongoing, and resolutions will not, you know, if there's a complaint, previously your complaint, if you're a worker, you would take it to your employer, and they would adjudicate that, I'm sure, in an unbiased fashion. But now it's going to be adjudicated by a government agency or a committee, whether they will be unbiased. You know, they're probably in bed with the people who are doing all the building anyway. There also is going to be a minimum wage, although nobody has determined what the level is going to be. We have one more text graphic, please, which says, other measures the ITUC said it had secured from the government included an end to the human rights abuses of workers having their promised contracts of employment replaced by worse terms when they arrive in the country. The ITUC said contracts would in future be lodged with the government authority. It said the government had also committed to having workers' committees and a disputes resolution process for dealing with complaints and grievances. Burrow said the country's ruler, the Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, supported these reforms, and Burrow is the woman from the ITUC, who would lodge the complaint initially. So now Amnesty International they have been critical of Qatar's government and the companies and this practices. They are also reserving judgment, saying we're not sure. We'll see how it goes. And basically, it sounds like it's a positive first step. because this is, I mean, this is notorious, the horrible conditions. You know, they go to Nepal and the Philippines and they recruit workers and they say, oh, it's going to be great, you can make all this money. And they get there, they confiscate their passports, they say, you work for this company now, and they house you, they work you, you have no rights, and you can't go home, and you get paid less than you thought you were going to get paid. And, you know, it is slave, virtual, although real, actual slave labor, and to the extent that it was, got a lot of international attention, and horrific, and deservedly so. And now, because of the attention of the World Cup, hopefully there will be changes. But like when you hear a story like this, do you say, okay, yes, that's actually going to improve the lives of these workers, or are you saying they're just papering over this until 2022? They host the World Cup, and then it'll go back to business as usual. Or nothing may come of any of this. That's my concern, but I don't know, maybe you're a little more optimistic than I am. Or you don't think about it.
No, I actually had not heard of this prior.
You didn't go to Qatar? I thought you were going to have something for everyone. You know,
you cut to grace, a field reporter. No, I really was unaware of this. And to me, just hearing you go through all the details of this again, it is really horrific. What it reminds me of is that in school, we sort of learn about slavery being the end of the Civil War. That's kind of the end of our education on slavery. Certainly, we don't go into modern day slavery, which is, as you hear, alive and well, but under usually another name. It's sort of disguised as something else.
Right. The Civil War basically just rebranded slavery.
Right. And so now you have kafala, and it sounds like the practices are really shady. And I do have a level of skepticism when it comes to, will these companies, now they have a little bit of government oversight, but are they now inclined to be as honest as they probably should be about the conditions of the workers? Or are they saying, you know, we really need to churn out as much work as we can from these people for the rollout of the World Cup? That's where I find myself feeling very cynical.
Yeah, it's like trust but verify. It's oversight. What's the oversight going to be?
This is a solution here, right? I don't think that's.
But these are, you know, the people who are petitioning for this are saying, well, this is a good first step. Then I have to feel like it's not like Amnesty International is going to be like, all right, let's go for drinks, and that's the end of, you know, we can, you know, Qatar is done, and we can, you know, wheel it off and put it in this little corner like in the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
But let's put this in perspective, right? This comes up because of an event that has been awarded by FIFA.
Yeah.
Right?
A corrupt organization.
Right. Right. So do you think FIFA cares?
No, I don't think FIFA cares. Obviously, FIFA doesn't care.
Look, like if I had to, you know, as we're going through this story, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, who's worse? FIFA, the IOC, and this will be controversial, NCAA. Who's worse, right? I don't know. I mean, certainly IOC and FIFA, like, it's a runoff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I have trouble thinking that, if anything, you would think it's the FIFA organizers' best interest to, like, guys, paper this over and just keep it quiet so we can do what we need to do and make our money, and we'll go, you know.
Yeah, once the construction is all done, they won't need the workers as much anymore,
right,
and they can just let them die off as far as they're concerned, probably, or just ship them back to Nepal. But I feel like if they were smart, FIFA would have said, no, we're awarding it to Qatar to shine a light on their practices there, and we're hoping that by having the World Cup, the bullshit would have stunk too much for anybody to even stay in the room.
Yeah.
They would have collapsed like a bunch of migrant workers in Qatar. So anyway, we'll see.
That's the equivalent of like James Toback saying, "Hey, look at what Weinstein's doing."
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
at least the world is aware of it, and what was going, you know, this has been a long-standing practice, and now they're shining a light on it to an extent, and hopefully it will improve. But you're right. I feel like slavery in the United States, we have this image, it's black people, and it's working, you know, picking cotton.
And we solved that, it's done now, racism is over.
Right, but if it doesn't look like that, we don't think of it as slavery. If you're just working in a sweatshop somewhere, that's still slavery, or sex slavery, and all the other kinds of slavery that's still going on in the world. All right, we only have number three, my goodness. All right, question number three comes to us from England, where we all know where that is, right? Okay, and I hope you know where that is. The UK, actually, not England, that's the United Kingdom. And the question is as follows. England's National Health Service recently launched a controversial new program designed to save hospitals money by doing what? Is it A, replacing some doctors with experienced nurse practitioners in ER triage situations? B, housing patients recovering from surgery in nearby private residences? C, teaming with Uber to more efficiently direct ambulances responding to medical emergencies? Or D, offering patients half-price discounts for performing do-it-yourself appendectomies? Only half price. That would seem You should get like three quarters off at least.
I'm very disappointed that one of these choices is not serving tea.
Is that the?
I think I read this story.
Well, that's okay.
I think it's.
I mean, Hannah.
I may have misread a different story.
The one time Hannah was on the post game, she cheated by actually monitoring international news on a regular basis, which I felt that's not fair.
That's not cheating.
That's cheating.
How dare she?
How
stay
dare
informed?
She? Yeah, it was by listening to the BBC. Come on, get out of here. Come on. All right, so we have answers of A and A. We both said A. The correct answer is. B, housing patients recovering from surgery.
That was a different story I read.
You're always reading different stories. All right, so.
You're fucking killing me. Yeah, you are. So
patients recovering from surgery could be discharged from hospitals to recuperate in private houses nearby as a part of an NHS trial that could earn those renting out the rooms up to £1,000 per month. The scheme aims to tackle bed shortages and save money, but has been criticized by medical professionals and social workers who warn it would give too much responsibility to untrained members of the public. So, the first text grab. This is a stock
lawyers
image.
And barristers all over the UK are like, yeah.
Maybe they may. I don't know what the pertinent laws would be. But anyway, so let's go to the first text graphic, Irma. A startup, Care Rooms, is working with the NHS and councils in Southend and elsewhere in Essex to pilot the model and finalize how it will work. It says patients would benefit from a safe, comfortable place to recuperate from hospital, as well as helping the NHS. Hosts would be asked to welcome patients recovering from minor procedures, cook 3 microwave meals a day, and offer conversation, according to Care Rooms, in a scheme targeting people who do not have a family able to care for them. Now, this is called bed blocking. It's a term that's called bed blocking, and it's risen by nearly 40% in the past year. It's where, and they say on some days, 6,000 patients are taking up beds when they no longer require hospital treatment. So they're in a hospital, they don't really need to be, according to the NHS, and so we want to ship them out in like an Airbnb type deal with hospital patients recovering from surgery. Now, the Save Southend A&E campaign group, whose members include doctors and other clinicians, warned it opens a huge can of worms for safeguarding governance and possible financial and emotional abuse of people at their most vulnerable time, which would seem obvious. The Care Rooms, the organization putting this together, said, "Hey, you know, we're not stupid. We're looking into that. We're gonna have we're gonna interview the hosts. We're gonna have disclosure checks and food hygiene tests and all this sort of. They have to understand what the pertinent care laws are. But a lot of people are not buying it. But the financial model is still to be finalized. Rooms will be rented out to funders at about £100 a night, with half going to the host and half going to NHS." To pay for the care services required, and then a margin for a company called Care Rooms. So they're going to skim. It's a private company that's going to skim a little off the top of each of those. And also, the people opposed to this are concerned that the company is pitching itself as a way for people to make a little extra money. We have one more text graphic. Save Southend A&E said that the company was handing out flyers in the public canteen at Southend Hospital this month, which headlined with a financial opener offering people the chance to earn up to £1,000 a month renting out a spare room to accommodate someone needing to recuperate from hospital. We are shocked that an NHS trust is endorsing such a company. It is almost weekly that there are reports of abuse and poor care in registered residential and care homes. Therefore, the monitoring of such placements in private homes would be a huge and risky task. So, the question is, what do you think about this? Do you think they're right, or is this a smart move to maximize the number of bodies in empty beds? I mean, the guy's saying the abuse is already happening once a week in the places they're already monitoring. So why the hell not? No?
This is again an episode of Black Mirror, right?
I see this as ammunition for people who are against single payer healthcare in this country. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, look at what's happening in Great Britain, in the UK. They've got too many people staying malingering, and they have to put them in private houses, right?
Yeah, do you want single payer healthcare? Then are you prepared to house a stranger in your home that's recuperating from an operation that made them be on painkillers where they're out of their mind and they're attacking your child? I don't know.
We can't overfund the VA and take care of everybody. Those people sit around and they're going to put them up in our houses, and that's against the Constitution. They can't put soldiers in houses.
Yeah, it's the Fourth Amendment. It violates the Fourth Amendment.
This goes against the Fourth Amendment.
Soldiers in the war against socialism. So this probably is you know, there's probably something to be said for this, but you're right. This is the kind of thing where you defund the NHS. They're desperate for money. They take risks. And but what's going to happen, obviously, is the first incident of anything happening, the lawsuit, if the pertinent laws apply, then I mean, it seems like the company, unless they, who's going to insure this company? Because somebody's going to have to pay for this when something does go awry. When someone who's who has a house near the hospital, just so they can go and try to commit elder abuse on the sly, is going to be like, oh, perfect, bring it to my house.
Well, so then you're going to get something that happens with Airbnb, right? You're going to have people buying up houses and hiring someone akin to a nurse practitioner, and
yeah,
putting, you know, renting that out specifically so they can do that, right? And it's, they're going to have what's going to effectively be unlicensed care facilities.
But that might actually be better than random homes, because it would be a, like, you know, or maybe they don't hire a licensed nurse practitioner. Maybe they just hire.
I actually am going to migrant worker in real estate in the UK.
And then you just have someone look like a nurse practitioner, or you can pass yourself off without anyone really.
You just
really
put someone in a
squinting
nurse's uniform,
or you can get a robot, like a Japanese robot, that all does deliver these, you know, microwave meals.
We're back to virtual slavery, though.
Yeah, okay, we're going to cut this whole story and we're going to put together a little business proposition.
And
Grace, Matt, and I are going to go into business together. We're going to be raking in the pounds. All right, next story comes to us from where? Japan, I think, right? Oh. Yes, there it is. We all know where Japan is. There it is. So what's the question? The question is, authorities in Japan have announced the capture of a thief who gained renown for staging burglaries while wearing what kind of costume?
Can't wait to see what these
was it
are.
A, ninja, B, Mighty Morphin Power Ranger, C, samurai, or D, sexy nurse? Rawr. I was either going to say, the D answer was either going to be sexy nurse or two-person horse. I didn't know which was funnier. You're a comedian, you're a professional comedian. Which is funnier, neither?
A professional comedian, allegedly.
You're an alleged professional comedian. You're a virtual comedian.
I'm a virtual comedian.
All right, we have answers of A and B. The correct answer, Irma, is A,
I mean,
ninja.
Come on.
I thought it was too obvious.
It's too obvious.
Come on.
Yeah, it's a.
I hate that song, Bart.
Grace is trying to she's overthinking it. You know, that's one thing about not being very smart. Nobody ever accuses me of overthinking things. So, what's the story? So we have the 74-year-old ninja thief.
That's the story.
That's the story.
74.
Yeah.
That's old school.
So he was a prolific thief. He usually covered his face, but he had been caught on a security camera this year and was put under surveillance, which led to his arrest in July.
That's not him.
That's just a ninja. But he's thought to have carried out more than 250 break-ins. This is a very grainy image that they caught
of him.
He's
not much of a ninja if they got a picture of him. There's actually 20 more ninjas
in the
picture.
Maybe it is 20 different guys. So they think that he has stolen more than 30 million yen, which is about $260,000 over the past in 250 break-ins that have gone on the last 8 years. Police have been baffled by the series of burglaries carried out by a suspect wearing black, assuming they had been carried out by someone younger. And what's we have a text graphic here, please, Irma.
I was hoping that was a baby.
Investigators observed the suspect, whom they say seemed little different from most elderly men, during the day. But they say he then went into an abandoned building and changed clothes before waiting until it got dark to steal. He was dressed in all black, just like a ninja, a senior official in the western Japanese city of Osaka said. Police said that he displayed great physical ability, running effortlessly on top of walls instead of taking the streets. So he was in character. He was method.
Running effortlessly along walls?
Well,
on top of walls.
On top of walls.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to be like, well, we have a superhero on our hands.
He's a ninja. Of course,
not
he's
Spider-Man.
Running across walls.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And then the last text graphic, which is the capper on the story. After his arrest, the man was quoted as saying, if I were younger, I wouldn't have been caught. I'll quit now as I'm 74 and old enough.
Truth.
I like how he's like.
Such a Scooby-Doo ending.
Yeah.
If I had been younger, your meddling kids wouldn't have caught me.
I like how he thinks it's his choice whether he quits or not. Like, presumably.
Well, I mean, if he's a ninja, no problem getting out of jail.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You're
right.
The point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, he's not as young as he used to be.
Well, if he was younger,
right,
then he would be.
It takes him 20 minutes
to
get out of jail instead of 10.
Yeah,
those Japanese jails, I'm sure they're pretty cushy. All right, and our last story comes to us from France. You're part Belgian or something. That's right next to France. You should definitely get this one right.
I was raised in Belgium, yes.
Oh, whatever. I'm close enough. So, all right, what's the question, Irma? A recent government ministers' meeting at the French presidential palace was interrupted when President Macron's dog did what? Was it A, peed into an ornately decorated fireplace. B, started humping Justice Minister Francois Bayrou's leg. C, scooted its butt across a Louis XIV Sevenier carpet. Or D, failed to laugh even once at the Jerry Lewis movie they were all watching.
Don't look at my answer.
We have one guess of A and one guess of C. A and C. And what is the correct answer, Irma? It's A. Boy, peed into an ornately decorated.
I heard this story.
You already knew this. Well, there you go. So there's no shame in your game, Grace. I think, you know, glaring at me.
Bart, you didn't need to play it again.
You get the Steve-O commemorative trophy for going over five?
I don't want to talk about it right now, Malcolm.
Listen, Steve got 12 in a row wrong. There are only three possible answers.
Steve-O putting the zero.
Yeah.
He puts
the O for in Steve-O. So, all right. So the Macrons took into their home a stray dog. Their home is the Élysée Palace. And so it peed in an ornate mantelpiece during this meeting. The act was recorded by TV news crews who were filming the talks between Emmanuel Macron and three junior ministers in the gilded office of the French head of state. And Nemo is the dog's name. He's a 2-year-old black Labrador Griffon cross. You can see him. We have video. We have video. So I mean, come on.
Ça arrive souvent ?
Non.
C'est la première fois que vous avez déclenché chez mon chien un comportement totalement inhabituel. Et bravo, mon vieux. Bravo.
Qui est le maître de ce chien ?
C'est moi. Mais il ne m'a jamais fait ça. Alors, pardon.
I was waiting for one of them to say, you should have seen what Trump did when he was here.
Hey, that's right. I mean, there was pee involved, but it wasn't in the, well,
poor dog. You know, they're not letting him have a cigarette and just express his existential ennui.
That's right. He was upset at the low caliber or low quality of the camembert that was served earlier.
I'm so bored with this ministration.
So it turns out that Nemo is not the first presidential pet to cause this trouble at the Elysee. We have one text rather for this, which is I think we have. Do we have one? There it is. Ex-President Nicolas Sarkozy's dogs chewed and scratched priceless furniture, carpets, and soft furnishing at the palace, causing tens of thousands of euros worth of damage. And then Jacques Chirac, who was head of state before Sarkozy came to power in 2007, had to give away his Maltese Bichon after he moved out of the Elysee after the dog attacked him several times, reportedly because it was depressed at having to move to smaller living quarters. So Chirac moves out, and then that's when the dog. But it was a Maltese Bichon, which are about, you know, the size of your pinky, and
so they're small.
You're tiny, and Chirac is like, we have to give them away.
I never really considered how difficult it must be to be a dog to a head of state.
A first dog.
Yeah, first.
A first dog. Pet in general.
It's got to be tricky, and they're weird smells, and everything's kind of old, and you can't. I mean, the rules.
Come in and
lots of people are coming in and out, and you want to be territorial. Or sometimes they just forget about you, and you have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I don't blame the dog.
I don't blame the dog.
Well, was Chirac's dog mad because the new head of state quarters were smaller than he was used to?
No, I think that they're talking about after Chirac moved out.
Oh, okay.
Then he moved to smaller quarters. The because, you know, a Maltese needs a lot of space to, you know, just run and run and run. That's like a dog that people carry in their purse, right? Mm-hmm. But speaking of dogs.
Speaking of dogs.
Our next segment. Thank you very much for playing Weekly World News. That's how you play. And you did great.
Thank you.
3 out of 5? 4 out of 5?
3.
I like how the only one of the 5 stories that you had, you know, heard was the least important, the most meaningless, the dopiest, which is the dog peeing.
That's what I pay attention to.
There's always like, next time.
Oh, that's a silly story.
It's a dog related story. They're dog lovers, and they both want to talk about their dogs, which is normally something I would not allow because I don't tolerate that type of thing. But I'm so thankful and appreciative that they came in that we're gonna hand it over to the next segment, which I like to call Who's a Good Boy? Or maybe who's really a good boy? It's something along those lines. But you have both female dogs, or you have a.
I have a boy.
You have
dog.
A boy. And you
I have a female dog.
So who's a good boy slash girl?
Who's a good bitch?
Willie's the who wins that one?
Yeah, he is definitely a better boy than.
All right,
Sabrina.
So we have images of these First, there's Sabrina.
Sabrina.
That's Matt's dog, Sabrina. How old is she?
Picture. She's, we think, about 5 years old. That's a rare picture of her with her ears not straight up. They're normally very high up in the air.
Very alert.
We have dogs that have very similar ears that are very big, sort of like antennae. And that's how we, I think we just figured out that our dogs were great because maybe I brought in Willie or something, or
right. You brought in Willie. I brought in Sabrina.
They right, and we realize how similar our dogs
and
look.
Also
that's
awesome.
Willie with
so
his antenna
Willie.
Ears.
Willie has a darker snout than Sabrina does.
He does, yeah. And Willie is also about 5 years old. His full name is Willie Nelson Baldridge.
Okay.
And he is a very good boy, and he has pooped in my house, which doesn't go along well with the sentence that I just said. But I want to be honest. And I think he did it because he wanted to mark the new house that we moved into. So I think
that's had his reasons.
He had his reasons. Usually if he has to poop in the house, which he doesn't do that much, but when he does have to, it has been in the bathtub, which I feel like is his way of letting us know that, you know.
That's like meeting you halfway.
That's a good dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, that's a good dog.
Very good boy.
Right?
It doesn't happen a lot, but when it has happened, it's usually because he's nervous about something. And like when we're nervous, it's a human reaction. You want to shit your pants. Does Sabrina do anything weird like that?
Sabrina has issues with small dogs.
Yeah, well,
she protects us from the tyranny
of
small dogs.
Keep her away from Jacques Chirac's dog.
Right? She'd take care of that problem once and for all. We adopted Sabrina from the shelter about a little over a year ago, and she had ended up, she was in the system for almost 2 years, did some hard time. She's missing some teeth. She ended up in the shelter because there was an incident with another dog that the other dog ended up put down.
Ooh, ouch.
Yes, they were had
not because
living
the
together.
Other dog was so aggressive, but because the other dog was
so
injured.
They'd been living together for years, and something happened, some incident, and the other dog got put down, and so the family that owned both dogs put Sabrina up for adoption.
Oh my god!
So we knew that getting into it, and so we try and make sure that we keep her in control. We don't leave her unsupervised with other dogs. She's a total love bug. She loves people. I mean, you can break in the house and she'll show you where the silver is.
Yeah.
Unless you're a small dog.
Unless you're a ninja.
A weird thing about
she wants to spot you.
Shelter dogs and adopting from a shelter, which we both have done, is finding out the bits and pieces and fragments of your dog's story before you guys met and how it sort of affects their behavior. So Willie, what we know about him is that his previous owner killed herself and he was in the apartment when something went down.
Wow.
I don't know any of the details, but he was found in the apartment and then he was in the shelter for about a year also. And he is very social, really friendly, loves other dogs. But something I've noticed about him is that he loves being outside and going for walks. Like, it is just coke to him. Like, he just goes crazy for a walk. And it'll be, you know, a 5-minute walk just to let him go to the bathroom and he'll just lose his damn mind. And I realized that it's probably because it wasn't, I mean, I'm only speculating, but I imagine this whole world of where he was the companion to someone who was going through something really troubling and maybe didn't go outside that often. And so when I take him outside with regularity, he just loses his shit every single time. Like, it's the greatest thing in the world. But it is so weird when you have a shelter dog and you just imagine that, you know, Willie's 5, Sabrina's 5. There were years of a totally alternate reality that they experienced and adjusted to.
These dogs, especially yours, any dog has an excuse for existential ennui. It's Willie. You know, a year in the shelter and owner committing suicide, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, you guys are you're terrific for adopting shelter. I only get my dogs from puppy mills, exclusively.
Those are more delicious.
And now they're outlawing that puppy mills in California.
Yeah.
Aren't
well,
they?
I think
so. I'm gonna have to go out of
law
state
is
now.
The pet stores can't sell dogs from puppy mills, so I don't think that's outlawed. If I'm not mistaken,
that's
I think they haven't outlawed
yeah.
the mills, but it's that they can't.
Pet
there's,
stores
there's
can
not
only
a business
carry.
Model for mills to sell to in California.
Yeah, pet stores can only carry rescue pets or dogs specifically. I don't really think
there's
cat
mills.
Because
no one's got a kitten mill.
There are too many. My uncle had like a cat farm for a while, but that was just him taking in a lot of strays. It was another way to say hoarding.
It's a terrible investment.
Yeah.
You plant the kittens and then in the spring, All right, so well, thank you very much for sharing your dog stories with us. We appreciate it. Mm-hmm. It seems like really loved dogs, beloved dogs. And before we have to go, I want to get to our, you know, another one of our favorite segments of the Proud 19 here. Who, by the way, I want to mention Karen Henton. I want to know if you, she's a big fan. She lives in Japan, and that Japan story was dedicated to you. You're our ninja. But moving on, let's do a little totally true or totally bullshit because everyone loves that. So we have an intro for that as well.
Well, it's totally bullshit because Steve-O's not here. I mean, well, right off the bat.
The funny thing is, Lies. It's supposed to be with Steve-O and Malcolm Fletcher and Dave Kohler. But, you know, even though we've been doing it for a few years now, we've never bothered to change the graphic to include Dave. And also, Dave doesn't, you know, Steve wishes Dave would be upset by that. Meanwhile, Dave, he barely even wants to be associated with us enough. I mean, he was here earlier today and was like, yeah, I can't make it. I have, there's a that thing.
I got a thing.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway, so Dave's on my shit list.
My friends and I do that. We say, we have cool shit to do.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Very. Yeah. Dave's very.
That's the
busy.
Answer for everything. I have cool shit to do.
Yeah. So Steve is in Germany, by the way. So
that's
he has
no
a
excuse.
Legit excuse. Yeah. He's well. He's was called up in front of a war crimes tribunal, so he kind of had to go.
I think it's total bullshit.
You don't know what he did, and he did it to Don.
No, I think it's total bullshit that he's in Germany.
Yeah, it is bullshit. You should
smart.
Be here.
He's the ninja.
Let's start, Irma. Let's start with the Harvey Weinstein one. So I did this a couple of weeks ago with. John Iadarola and Amir and Steve, I think, but I wanted to get your take on it. So the Harvey Weinstein revelations will lead to wider accusations of sexual impropriety that will soon bring down many more important Hollywood power players. And the way we play this game, as I explained to you, but in case you at home are watching for the first time, I put forward these propositions and then we on the panel have to decide whether it's A, totally true, or B, totally bullshit. And our motto here is we don't do nuance. Everything's either totally bullshit or it's totally true. And then we explain about how there's actually kind of nuance involved and we go back on our motto. But nevertheless, so I'm going to put it to you first. You're the Hollywood expert.
Yeah.
You ruined Hollywood.
I did.
Did you guys know that Matt actually ruined the movies business?
Yep.
He was actually blamed in print for Rotten Tomatoes ruining the movie business.
Now I'm here at Young Turks ruining everything else.
It wasn't Harvey Weinstein, it was you. So the question is, is it just going to be Harvey Weinstein? I mean, we're already seeing James Toback, we're seeing the ripple effect, but is the ripple effect going to build into a tidal wave or is the ripple effect going to die out and it'll be the end of that story?
So totally true, more Hollywood players will get taken down. We've seen already a bunch of people, I made some notes on this actually, because there's a bunch of people. So there's the guy at Amazon, right?
Yeah.
Who stepped back, Roy Price, mm-hmm. left Amazon, stepped down
yeah.
for accusations about harassment. Two more execs at Amazon have stepped down as of today. Now, it's unclear whether there were accusations, but there is at least a sense that they may have been complicit in covering up what Roy Price had done. There's an accusation against Bob Weinstein,
uh-huh.
right, in his past. So, you know, there's been calls for that whole board to step down because as investigations get into the money there, at the Weinstein Company, it's going to be harder and harder for that board to say, oh, we didn't know anything, right? I mean, and it doesn't make them look good that if the response is, well, we didn't really know, even though there's financial evidence, like, well, then maybe you guys should get out, right? So there's going to be more of that. There's James Toback. There's a story today about the rumors, which have only ever been said as rumors, but Louis C.K. has not addressed the rumors about similar behavior as far as masturbating in front of other people. There's Alec Baldwin has been, you know, tweeting nasty stuff, you know, what seems to be very misogynistic language towards a TV critic. Val Kilmer got accused of punching a woman who was auditioning for The Doors.
What about if Val Kilmer's career goes south, then what happens?
You know, the interesting thing is, you know, if Corey Feldman makes any traction with his accusations.
Okay, so the Corey Feldman thing is that he, a number of years ago, has made accusations. He said there's a lot of pedophilia going on in Hollywood, and there's one person in particular.
He and Corey Haim and a few other child stars were passed around.
Right, and he said there's one person who's a big name, who's too powerful. He can't expose him because he doesn't have the financial wherewithal to fight in court, and the guy would destroy him. But now that all this is happening, that's the one I've been waiting to hear.
It's going to be dominoes. Harvey was the most important guy in Hollywood. He was the most powerful, and there's going to be other people. And you know, I have my own theories that I won't say on air as who are two or three names that everybody would recognize, at least in the business, that will probably, I'll be actually more surprised if accusations don't surface about two or three of these people.
And it's not just Hollywood also. We've had Mark right. Halperin now, that he has apologized. And of course, as Hassan calls it, the sexual harassment factory or sexual abuse factory that is Fox News.
Right.
So Bill O'Reilly is hoping it all dies down and he comes back. But it seems like he's resigned that tough luck, right. It's over for him. That's a real sad one.
There was the accusation about Brian Singer a few years back that I suspect that will come back up in the news and wonder if there's going to be more accusers in that story. Who knows? You know, there's a lot of these NDAs that people end up signing as part of settlements. And, you know, you wonder if that law ends up, if somebody can address that issue in that NDAs aren't supposed to and aren't meant to cover up criminal activity.
Yeah.
Right? And so if people, you know, if somebody can come out against Harvey Weinstein and go fly in the face of what presumably an NDA kept them from talking about, then you're definitely going to see dominoes.
Okay.
You're going to see a bunch more people.
So Matt doesn't really have much to say about this, but what about you, Grace?
No, totally true. I echo everything that Matt said. I think that there was a culture that was toxic for years and years and years. And once people see that Harvey, again, the most important player in Hollywood, can be taken down, the lesser players, of which there are so many who have been acting inappropriately for years and years and years, because it was the culture, it was assumed that it was okay, you're not going to get caught, people in positions of power that were abusing that, everyone's going to fall. Hannah Cranston said something that I think is terrifying, but very accurate, which is that it's judgment day in Hollywood, and a lot of people are really afraid if they have been acting inappropriately for a while, because people are going to get called out. People are feeling emboldened, as they should, because we should be weeding out these rotten apples that have really that had people just, you know, being afraid and feeling silent and signing NDAs, not fully understanding what that would do for years. So I agree with everything that Matt said. I think this is going to be a major domino effect, and we're only beginning to see some of these names come out.
Yeah, and the thing I want to add to that is there's going to be a domino effect around the people that get accused of this type of behavior. But what I hope happens is, for instance, when Rose McGowan on Twitter calls out a while back that the whole board at Weinstein needs to step down, Conrad Riggs, who's the head of streaming for the unscripted division of Amazon, and Joe Lewis, who's the head of scripted programming, those guys may be stepping down just because they knew about it and didn't address it. And I think part of what's going to need to happen to change this culture is that the people that stand by and allow environments to fester that allows the behavior, they need to be held accountable as well. There need to be consequences for those people, because that's what helps stops it. Otherwise, it's too easy to say, oh, I didn't do anything.
Is Hollywood going to turn into a ghost town? Because I mean, like, who didn't know? Who wasn't complicit on some level? And who in a position of power wasn't complicit on some level, you know, with any responsibility and power?
Hey, listen, you know, for all we talk about the lack of representation and it's too many old white guys at the top, great. Great, right? Make it a ghost town, right? Because great, fine.
No, I mean, I wonder if this is the kind of thing where just as a financial, for the financial incentives, the industry will see it's in their best interest to promote more women. Because right. Women don't get accused of this type of shit. I'm sure it happens occasionally, but for the most part, never. It's like a woman serial killer. Well, you do murder with friends, you know, there's just not a lot, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's different.
And listen, we should be so lucky that we end up in a society where we have to start worrying about a mass epidemic of all these women in power abusing their power.
I don't think anybody's saying, you worried about the
We should be so lucky that ends up being something we have to start worrying about, because Jesus, we ain't there yet. Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, this is as horrific as these revelations are, and for those of us who are not part of the show business to hear about how widespread it is, it, you know, it's upsetting, but the reality is that this is good news. And the more that it comes out, it'll be interesting to hear the first person who gets accused and pushes back and says, no, she's lying and they're lying and, you know, you're going to have to see you in court, that sort of thing, because that may happen also. Not saying because people are going to be falsely accused, but because somebody's going to say, I want to hold on to what I got and I'm not willing to go the Harvey Weinstein route. Anyway,
I think that's going to be the exception though.
Anyway, listen, I'm just, I don't know, do I say something? When I first was hired here, I had to watch Cenk take a shower. And that was very. Oh no, wait. No wait, I snuck in to do that. To make the video for that was a separate issue. Listen, I want to thank Matt and Grace for coming and doing the Friday post game with me. I really appreciate it. They did a great job. Matt is, of course, might as well plug away.
What the Flick. I'm the host of What the Flick, and we have been doing Star Trek reviews and The Deuce reviews, which nobody's watching, but if you're watching The Deuce, they're pretty good. We're reviewing Star Trek episode by episode, and then new movies every week.
Wait, the original Star Trek?
No.
Oh, the movie. Show.
The new Star Trek, come on.
No, I think you should go back and do the original episodes. That'd be entertaining.
Also, people get really upset when I say, I haven't seen The Wire.
Yeah, okay.
You just did that to sort of like get people mad in the comment section.
Okay. I was with Matt until he said he hadn't watched The Wire. Then go fuck that guy.
I'll
plug the new season of Murder with Friends, season 2.
Webby nominated.
Streamy nominated. Well deserved.
Thank you. We're out for season 2. The most recent episode came out this week. It was on Casey Anthony. But if you're a member, which you are because you're watching this, we upload episodes as soon as they're done. So you don't have to wait the week to check everything out. Next week, as you can find on the Murder with Friends page, we're talking about the atrocities of war. It's pretty grim stuff, but it's the dark side of history that we like to talk about on the show. So check that out.
All right, thanks a lot for watching, guys. If you have any totally true or totally bullshit recommendations for me, you can email me or put them in the comments. I'd love to hear them. And thanks for watching. Have a great weekend. We appreciate your watching. And as always, I like to say, stay strong.